It's the Cinema Time Capsule Podcast with your hosts, Child of the 80s and Dr. Retro. This episode, we're talking about tween Canadian dramas on television.
Cinema Time Capsule's mission is to curate and compile the best movies of the 80s for future generations to enjoy. We review the movies with help from our esteemed guests to decide collectively if they're as good as we remember them. The movies that are placed in the Cinema Time Capsule are chosen by you, the viewer. However, we're staying in the house today instead of going to the theater, so head to the kitchen and get yourself a treat. I am your host, Child of the 80s, Jeff, and alongside me is my co-host, the Doctor of All Things Retro, Joel.
Heyo! This episode is a Blitz edition. Blitz editions consist of us talking about something that we loved from the 80s. No vote, no nonsense, just two dudes talking. In this first Blitz, we're going back to some classic Canadian tween TV shows.
Oh yeah. Before we begin, though, we have a new feature on CTC.
Absolutely. We are the only retro podcast that has a medical correspondent on staff. We paid the big bucks for this guy.
Huge.
Yeah. So we've consulted with Dr. Marco about the plausibility of some of the feats of strength depicted in the films we reviewed in our last episode. Let's hear what he has to say.
Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Marco in California, medical consultant from Cinema Time Capsule. Regarding a couple of scenes that were discussed in the show, Jean-Claude Van Damme and his groin. He has a very strong groin. The scene where he's stretching his groin between two trees and is otherwise tied up by his arms is not very wise to attempt on your own. Your groin will probably rip and you'll have lots of injuries and you will need to see a doctor for that. So do not attempt it unless you are Jean-Claude Van Damme. The second thing is a scene where a throat was ripped out by a bare hand. Also very unlikely. There are a lot of slippery structures inside of there and lots of blood and other gore and awfulness. I think probably you would really hurt someone and maybe even kill them by doing so on account of their windpipe being damaged or other structures that are generally pretty important in your neck being damaged. But once again, I don't think you could do this. Now, you know, when I was a bouncer, I could probably have done both of these things many times over without any issue. But, you know, I'm not a bouncer anymore. Now I'm just a doctor. Please note that the level of confidence you should place in my advice is directly proportional to the level of compensation that I receive from Cinema Time Capsule. All right, everyone, stay healthy. Goodbye.
Now's the time in the show when we fact-check the dumb things we said on the previous episode. It's, Joel, it's becoming a common occurrence for viewers to call out me, Child of the 80s, for misinformation. I don't know if you've picked up on that, but usually I say
just
something
stopped.
Stupid.
I barely pay attention to you most of the time for that reason.
Yeah, it's becoming a problem, and now I'm being called out
on the internet.
On the internet. Simon, who usually calls me out on things ad hoc. Simon, what do you have for us today?
Well, Jeff, not only did you think Jeff Healey's band was made up of two twins and they're absolutely not twins. But when
I'm still in disbelief about this.
When you referenced Ben Kingsley playing Gandhi as an Anglo actor. M.W. Yeah. Dynamite on, I guess it was from the iTunes
or review.
Apple podcast, has corrected you that Kingsley is half Indian and his birth name is literally Krishan Pandit Banji. I hope I said that right. So it turns out, Jeff, you were way off on that one.
So that's kind of embarrassing, actually. But I'm going to take it. I want to thank
you.
We got to grow. We got
to
learn.
Well, I mean, to say, I think everyone understands what I was trying to get at. And for me, not having any idea that Ben Kingsley is of Indian descent, that was news to me. So I want to thank M.W. Dynamite for calling me out on that. I definitely don't want to be spreading misinformation. So M.W. Dynamite if you're willing to accept the challenge, I'm appointing you as our official fact checker. So anytime I mess up or our guests mess up, please send us a message or a voice message to cinematimecapsule@gmail.com. The next time our facts are off base, and we would like to thank you for giving us a favorable review despite my misinformation spreading. Joel?
And I will also call out myself because I foolishly said that Vernon Wells was in Commando and Predator. Like an idiot.
I wondered about that, but I didn't.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you not calling me out on live. I did question. I said, afterwards,
he's in that?
Yeah. And I insisted, yeah, he is.
I just accepted.
But then I realized afterwards, no, I was mixing him with Bill Duke, who was in both Commando and Predator, while Vernon Wells was only in Commando. Bill, you deserve better, and I won't make that same mistake again.
Well, you'll make a different mistake.
Different. That's why I said it'll be not that one.
It's fine. Yeah. Again, we're on our fifth episode, and Dr. Retro, you and I weren't sure if people were actually going to listen to the podcast when we first started out. But four episodes in, it appears that we have some retro movie fans that are actually listening on a regular basis. Could you give us the lowdown on our viewership according to your metrics?
Yes, absolutely. While most of our listeners are fellow Canucks, we have some Americans who tune in. We've also had viewers from the United Kingdom, Brazil, Japan, New Zealand, Ukraine, and Australia. That's bizarre to me.
That's amazing.
Yeah, very quickly. So thanks to everyone for tuning in. Tell your friends, particularly in different countries, because that'll be fun for us to see who's listening. So why don't we now go check the old answer machine to see if anyone's called us?
Let's do it.
Heyo, you've reached Cinema Time Capsule. This is Dr. Retro Joel.
Oh, hey, this is Child of the Age Jeff.
Just leave us a message after the beep.
Hi, it's John from Grimsby, and I'm loving Cinema Time Capsule, especially when it gives me an opportunity to talk about one of my favorite movies that I've seen 20 times, Bloodsport. Now, Bloodsport was one of those movies as a kid everyone remembers because we got to see for the first time a bunch of multidisciplined fighters of all different sizes take each other on. And for whatever reason, after you were done watching the movie, it made you feel like you could actually fight like these guys. I remember my friends and I like watching it right after and, you know, trying all the different moves on each other, and it always ended badly. Even later on, if you think about it, it probably spawned movie video games such as Street Fighter or Mortal Kombat. And I'd like to think that, you know, if the movie came out in 1988 and 5 years later the UFC was spawned, that it probably had a big hand in creating one of the biggest sporting events on pay-per-view right now is the Ultimate Fighting Championship. So whether you like Bloodsport or not, I think we can all agree that it has some spot in our history as children.
Hey everybody, this is Mark from Mark and Simon Soundtrack Show and Indie 101.5 in Hamilton. You can check us out on Facebook if you're so inclined. Normally we go on once a week and talk about movie music. And we have spent a lot of time in the past talking about the music of action films from the 80s. There have been action films from the beginning of film, and it really came into its own in the 80s. The amount of cheese involved in making these movies with Schwarzenegger and Stallone and Chuck Norris and Jean-Claude Van Damme and later on in the 80s. But these guys made these things amazing. So, I mean, in the 70s, you had your Bruce Lee, and they really made these things incredible. And then they just went one step beyond. My favorite, I think, of all the ones we were talking about would be the Schwarzenegger film Commando, which had a lot of really cheesy one-liners. That's okay. It's Schwarzenegger. He's allowed. He's a really funny guy. These things were incredible. I always loved these movies. And when they made Terminator 3 and 4 and 8 and whatever's going on with that franchise, as bad as they can be, they're always worth watching. Just, it's a great genre. And for 80s movies, the only other genre really that comes close to its popularity, I would say, was a slasher film. as the 80s was not just Schwarzenegger and Stallone, it was Freddy and Jason. These are the movies that made the 80s, and the action films were just that much more incredible because of it.
This is Mike from Hamilton, Ontario, and I gotta say, growing up, Conan the Barbarian and The Destroyer was definitely one of my dad's and my favorite movies. Growing up with three sisters, I definitely needed a little hardcore action to kind of even the playing field with all the girly movies they like to watch. So Conan the Barbarian is definitely one of my favorites growing up.
Thanks to all our viewers for paying attention to us and validating what we're doing is reaching an audience past our own families, as we thought that's
my,
all that would be.
Listen, my own family doesn't really listen, right? Other than Coach Froze.
Right. Well, my brother still counts. That's family.
Okay.
So we're going to press pause right now, take a little bathroom break before we press play again and watch a couple of our favorite shows on the old VCR.
We'll fight for freedom wherever there's trouble. G.I. Joe is there. G.I. Joe.
It's a Cobra attack. Get the G.I. Joe hovercraft. Get the new Joes aboard.
G.I. Joe hovercraft holds 9 Joes. It's the big new way to bring the Joe team into action. And it floats on water.
Release depth charges. Joe!
Chase that
Cobra! Way to go, Joe!
G.I. Joe hovercraft comes with driver, other figures, and equipment sold separately from Hasbro.
For this episode, Joel and I challenged each other to re-watch some of our favorite Canadian tween shows from the 80s. These are the shows that we watched just before we became full-fledged teenagers, which didn't happen for us until, I think, 1990 we became.
Yes.
Yep. We were 13 and
13. Right. Yeah. So the definition for us of a tween show for the purpose of this podcast is any show featuring kids in late elementary or middle school around 11, 13 years old and interactions they have with other kids of the same age, both in and out of school. There were a lot of shows back in the 80s in this era for adolescents. No particular order. Some of them included Silver Spoons. Danger Bay.
I love that's a Canadian.
Webster, Facts of Life, Different Strokes, Full House, Saved by the Bell, Family Ties, You Can't Do That on Television, The Wonder Years, Growing Pains, Who's the Boss? Alyssa Milano. My Two Dads, Stacey Keenan.
My Secret Identity.
Yep. Jerry O'Connell.
So those ones... A large portion of those ones are sitcoms, right?
Yes.
And revolve around families and such. For this episode, though, we got very specific and decided that our picks had to be produced and filmed in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
So our international viewers may not know what we're talking about, but if you want to know about Canadian 80s tween culture, we're going to bring you up to speed about 30 years later.
Though, yeah, one of them that we talk about for sure has... I think a global presence.
Well, they both do, but one, the one that you picked, I believe is very pervasive through many societies.
Yes. Wow. That sounds like...
a professorship of some sort.
Yeah, making this...
You are the doctor of retro.
Anthropological. Okay, so what makes 80s Canadian tween shows so unique in comparison from other decades?
If you watch any of these shows, you're going to notice right away, for the most part, these are real kids. These are not curated actors whose parents have been, you know, glamming them up for, you know, decades or not. Well, if you maybe 20
decade,
at that point.
Decade.
Actually,
singular.
Another point is they're not decades old. These are actual teen actors.
Yes, they're not adults playing 13-year-olds.
You'll notice some rudimentary production value. This is like not... when I sat my daughter down to watch it, she actually said to me, and I text this to you, Joel, this is hurting my eyes. I can't do this. Because it's not like that high gloss Hollywood.
No, I don't think anything takes place on a lot or a set. The set is a real place, a real street.
Yeah.
A location.
And so both these shows that we're going to talk about were filmed in Toronto neighborhoods that exist today. They're filmed in actual houses, neighborhoods, stores. There was no sets. Maybe there was closed school sets, perhaps.
For sure.
But there wasn't sets in a studio.
No.
Right?
I know we had that stuff up here at that time, but it was pretty small compared to now.
Today.
Yeah, yeah.
Both these shows that we're going to talk about are from the CBC.
Which is, what does it stand for?
Canadian Broadcasting Corporation.
Correct.
And they're mandated to show Canadian culture. And it was the primary producer of a lot of original Canadian content. Some really bad.
Yeah, but... like stuff that...
some good stuff.
Yeah, we watched...
we loved it.
Oh, yeah. And it's, I mean, it's still going. So I guess our neighbors to the south, I guess PBS is their version in some sense, right? Or well, NPR.
Well, and then UK CBC would be is, BBC,
yeah, yeah,
right?
Yep.
And then Australia has the Australian Broadcasting Corporation.
Right. So
state run, especially in the Commonwealths, yep, is pretty common.
Mm-hmm.
As I said, the filming for both these shows took place in 1980s Toronto, which is very different today.
Yeah,
many of the neighborhoods have been gentrified. They're unrecognizable. The skyline of 80s Toronto is totally changed.
Yeah, yep.
and it's a different feel now for us, I think, Toronto. It always had that monstrosity of the CN Tower, right?
Yeah,
and
that was the big thing that stood out.
Oh, for us, like going into Toronto, because mm-hmm. we were both from Hamilton, going into Toronto, was it a big event for you guys, or was it...
Oh, yeah, because I think we would go in very rarely just for a sporting event, and I think a couple, you know, class trips we would
Ontario
go...
Ontario Place.
Yeah, that's true.
Did
as a little kid, I have pictures of me at Ontario Place. I think we went to Canada's Wonderland a few times, but my family didn't go into Toronto a lot. But I remember in elementary school, or no, was it elementary school or high school? Elementary school, we would go in and see musicals, like The Phantom of the Opera was huge, and Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat, although I think that's 90s, so sorry.
That was 90s, but still.
Yeah. We didn't go in a lot, but did you?
No, it was like once or twice a year kind of thing.
And
Hamilton, you should know, folks, there's a rivalry between the two football teams. So
right.
If you were from Hamilton, you had to despise Toronto.
Right.
And I drank that Kool-Aid.
Sure.
We're looking at two shows today only, and we each had to come up with one. I'm going to start off first. I think this is a banger. And Joel, you said you never heard of the show?
I did. I said that. And then once you sent it to me, then as soon as I clicked play and the theme song came on, it reminded me that I have seen it. I just don't think I watched it
regularly.
Okay. But this was a big one for you. You said you watched a lot.
Well,
let's
roll. Let's roll that classic TV theme song. That once you hear it, it sticks with you.
I woke up running in my head because you're a jerk.
Simon, can you play that for us?
Hit it.
Life is just a learning game, and if you use your head, you'll always win, just like the Edison twins.
It is really catchy.
Yeah, man. No 2 days are quite the same. Life is just a learning game. If you use your head, you'll always win, just like the Edison twins.
Yeah, honestly, after watching two episodes, the next morning I woke up and it was playing in my brain.
Yeah, so it's been playing my brain for like the last 40 years, actually, because it's 1984.
Right, was the beginning.
Was the beginning of, it was the first airing of that. So, and it was always on repeat.
Can you summarize it for our viewers
who
haven't been able to see it yet?
Sure.
I'm sure they're all now looking it up.
Well, yeah, hopefully. And I used chat AI for this one. I just wanted to check it out. And it's pretty good. So this is what... I am no longer needed. I am chat AI bot. The Edison Twins is a Canadian television show that first aired in the early 1980s. It is a comedy drama series that follows the adventures of twin siblings, Tom and Annie Edison as they use their science and problem-solving skills to get themselves out of various situations. The show was popular among children and teenagers and is remembered by many as a classic of Canadian television. Chat AI bot. That's dead on. The show, I haven't seen the actors emerge into other shows necessarily. Like in the periphery. Like, so the Marnie McPhail as Annie.
Yep.
Andrew Sebastian as Tom. I did know that he was in a show called Droids,
yeah,
which I hated.
Did
but
you
loved?
Well,
I hated yeah. but loved because it was true. Like during
anything Star Wars,
Star
we wanted
Wars.
To like,
yeah.
But Ewoks was better than Droids.
Yeah, Ewoks yeah. is way better. Yeah. But Droids and Ewoks were like the bridge to, you know, give people their content
yeah.
for Star
well,
Wars.
Little kids, especially. Yeah,
oh, I watched it and I kind of hated it.
Yeah,
but his voice was used in it. Sonny Benson Thrasher was Paul. And you said his dad was from Prairie Oyster, the band?
I believe it's his mom.
Okay.
Yeah. He is the son of Joan Besson from Prairie Oyster, which is a very popular Canadian band.
And the biggest star to come out of this, which...
was Paul.
No.
Well, don't forget, Paul also did the voices of Max from My Pet Monster. Come on, that was a great show.
I liked it.
He also did voices in Care Bears, Garbage Pail Kids, Babar, and he was in Cats and Dog and Maniac Mansion, which I think was on YTV, which you watched a lot of.
I didn't watch that show,
though.
No. But the biggest star to come out of that is
yeah,
the guest.
Absolutely.
Larry, who is also known
Larry
as Corey Haim.
Yes.
Okay, so his if you are...
First on-screen appearance.
Yeah, so if you're an American or someone else that have seen Corey Haim, his first starring role was in the show.
Yep. And he's right off the hop.
He's good.
Yeah.
He nails it. And then another guest star that went to go on to more fame was Brian George, who is also Babu. On Seinfeld.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah.
Huh.
So he wasn't in the episodes that you watched, but he became their police officer.
And let's not overlook who brought us one of your favorite shows of your childhood.
Who?
Nelvana.
Oh, God.
Which
I don't want to diss Nelvana because you're right. They're
Cosmic
very...
Christmas coming back.
Oh, man.
Which is also the connection, I think, to Droids. Probably how Tom... got his
so Nelvana yeah. is one of the, I said during that episode we'd probably come back to some kind of
yep.
Nelvana production.
They are big in Canada.
All right, so I did my spiel. I made you watch the shows.
Yep.
You said you'd never really watched it before. What did you think? Did it hold up or was it just 80s trash?
I when I first watched it, I watched it as a 40-something adult and thought, this is not a good show.
oh, wow.
The acting was pretty cheesy. And I think because I couldn't find episode one because I wanted to watch the first one so I get a good feel for what's
well,
the trajectory here.
Well, the first episode of any show is not very good.
No, but it just introduces you to characters typically. And so we started with episode two, which was fine because it's not like it's super complex, but first episodes I watched, I thought this was the best idea you came up with. This is the beginning of your ideas, because we'll get into making fun of it shortly.
You will.
Well,
I'm going to take great offense.
Yeah, it's a cool premise, and I can totally see where someone came up with something interesting of how do we educate kids and get them excited about science and math.
Okay, so the premise is there's these two genius kids. They're high
school
students.
Tom Edison. Yeah.
Yeah.
Both.
And his
twin
and
sister.
His twin sister.
Annie. Yep.
And they're geniuses. They're high school students. There's no way. I've been in high schools. I've never met kids that are that intelligent in my life. So basically...
We definitely were not.
No, well, not even close. But every episode, there's some kind of caper
yep.
or something that's gone wrong. And yep. then they both have to use their science to figure yeah. it out.
And then they cut away from it and have an animated segment.
At the end.
Yeah, showing this is
how
the science behind the...
Yeah.
How they solve the mystery.
And if you notice, every episode begins with them doing some kind of preposterous experiment that connects directly to the problem.
It's amazing how what they were just learning always helps them.
Yeah, but they're like, if you're in high school and you're that age, you're not like constantly doing experiments and things like that. Like what they're doing is like PhD work.
Well, maybe, but there probably were some kids who were, you know, that we just didn't hang out with that they were maybe working on. Remember, here, this is how I'll bring him in. Mr. Delaville, our chemistry teacher, would every year would show everyone his childhood chemistry set and how this excited him about science as a kid.
I think that he was more into like blowing stuff up though, because every semester began with him taking sodium.
Yeah.
Do you remember sodium at all? The metal, soft metal sodium?
Yes, I'm familiar with sodium.
So, no, I'm talking about
the metal. That
It is a soft metal, and I don't know how he got away with this. But we had like a huge chunk of sodium, and this is highly unstable. And he would take a chunk of it, and he'd watch this. You can't do this at home. And then he'd throw it into water, and it would basically like burn up. And then I don't know if you were in the class, but he told us how they had to dispose of it one time. And they did it on the football field. And they put on football equipment and they built like a wooden screen around it and tossed it in a bucket of water and ran it, and it exploded.
Oh, wow. That does sound like him. He looked like the mad science teacher. His hair all over.
So basically, maybe
there were some folks.
Maybe there were some folks that did that.
Yeah, the second episode I watched, where it drove home, like this story makes no sense, was the younger brother is, like you said when we were talking about it, he was putting on a play about like a guy who goes to the moon, I think, and he's by himself in putting on this play, and it makes no sense, and then all of a sudden things start going wrong, and his sister comes in. It's like, is it being sabotaged, that someone wanted to sabotage an 8-year-old's play?
Yeah.
That he's self-produced play.
He's and, got carte blanche.
And then he starts accusing like the janitor and a teacher and then some other kid who's like in high school with their sister. The sister wants to be in the play. I don't know.
To extrapolate this. Yeah. So if you can, like, let's put it into 2022. So Paul would be considered the Elon Musk of the trio. He's the ideas man.
Right.
And he's got all the schemes, and then he uses his older, intelligent brother and sister to get things to come to fruition. Okay. Like every episode, it's Paul's got a zany thing going on, and then he's like consulting with the smart people.
And like we both had younger sisters.
Yes.
If our sisters were like, hey, do you want to hang out all the time? We would not have hung out all the time.
Get bent.
We didn't even hang out at all. So
hang out with my sister like only to get her to like do wrestling moves on and like run her over with a sled.
But so if we were Tom and Annie's age, so at that point, let's say even we'll be conservative and say 16 or 17, and our sisters are only a couple years younger than us. If we had a 9-year-old, you think you'd be spending all your time hanging out? Maybe you have to because there's no parents. The parents are always having to supervise Paul, apparently.
I did hang out with my sister quite a bit, but I didn't do plots we didn't do missions or anything.
No, that's true. That was, you'd save that for Mike and Ben.
Well, yeah, I would do missions with other people.
Yeah.
Simon, do you have any recollection of this? This is 1984. You had a beard at that point and driving around. So
I wasn't that old then. I actually only vaguely remember this show, but
probably the theme song.
TV wasn't a real big, we didn't watch TV on a regular basis. We watched movies on the weekends, but we didn't really watch TV daily in my place. So I don't remember. I vaguely remember it, but
there were kids like that who didn't watch TV.
Yeah.
Who didn't have screens.
I did have a limited amount because we lived on a dead end near the creek. Yeah. And so we often were told, no, you can't watch TV all day. Go out, go find a friend, ride your bike.
We had that too.
Yeah.
But then a lot of the time it was unlimited for me at a certain point. I had the morning for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And then the evenings until 8:30. But then my parents both worked too, so I was like latchkey. Well, I was one of the 80s latchkey kids.
And when was the show on? When do you remember watching it? Like, so, was it after school or
it was on? No, so I want to say it was. I'm not sure the air time, and I should have looked that up. But it aired on 1984 to I think only 1986 or 87.
Yeah, I think so.
But then it was on reruns because yes. I said to you I would watch it every morning before high school.
Oh, okay.
I don't know why.
Huh? Yeah, that's an odd choice. I guess if you watched it younger, then I can see.
I was already in the retro at that point.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Nothing coming out currently is any cool.
So the one thing I really liked about it is the filming location was in Weston Village in Toronto.
Ah, they were wearing Weston shirts in the episode that I watched today.
Yeah, and so the neighborhoods really changed. I used to teach below that neighborhood. Hmm. I was at Old Weston Road in St. Clair. So some of those old buildings were the old houses and things like that still stood. And it was really, it's really cool to go back and look at how those neighborhoods looked back then. It just felt really comfortable to me. And like they're running around, you get to see the parks and the variety stores, and there wasn't any square weird houses or any like avant-garde architecture.
Or skyscrapers.
Yeah, there wasn't. And the house that was used is still there today, but it's changed a little bit. And it's probably worth like $3 million
at least.
But it was very cool to check out that neighborhood. And when I was a kid watching it, I didn't know where Weston was. I knew it was somewhere in Toronto.
Yeah, but it looked, that's I think, as you were referencing before, these settings looked like our neighborhood in some sense. Like
sure they did.
It could just be the other side of town that we don't visit. Not a completely foreign part of the earth.
So the one I wanted you to really watch was the dog napping episode.
Yes, which I did.
And it was traumatic for me because I just got a dog. Mm. And I thought, oh my gosh, this probably could happen. But then I thought, this is not going to happen. So what happens in this episode, the plot is Paul, a.k.a. Elon Musk, is starting his own dog watching business.
Right.
And so he's like collecting various dogs. And then there's these two thugs in a gross panel van. And if you remember those, there were no minivans in the 80s.
No,
dudes.
No, that didn't exist yet.
There was just panel
just
vans.
Just vans. Which no were, minivans.
They
just
were
vans.
Really cool.
Yeah.
Ben C had a panel van and it was so cool. And these dudes drove around and they were total thugs and they were going around stealing dogs.
Yeah. Did you, the first dog napping was a bit funny to me because you see them park and the one guy in the passenger side gets out because he's obviously, the driver's the brains, like
of
usual.
Course.
So the other guy's just the lackey. He gets out and he pulls on gardening gloves.
And he doesn't want to get bit.
Well, that's what I wondered. And then he just, it's a little tiny dog and he just like unhooks the leash from the hook and then takes the dog. Like the gloves were completely unnecessary.
My dog Teddy bites me all the time.
I know, but if your dog bit you, it would go through cloth gloves.
No, you're right about that. But it's so the whole setup.
That was the best they came up with.
It's the whole setup.
And then, as they just literally drive around the same
neighborhood. The same neighborhood in Weston.
And just look for dogs that are outside.
This is easy. And so, okay, here's the difference between now and then. Now, everyone has surveillance.
Yeah.
We're surveillance, like everyone's got it. So they would go around one time, they would get caught. They'd be nabbed. Well, no one cares about their dogs in this episode. Several dogs
apparently.
Go missing. And the only one to save them is going to be Paul.
Yeah. And that all of these people are just leaving dogs outside in the front of their houses tied up. And then, the way they foil the plot is to get their friend's dog and just tie it up
Who
in a park and then hide somewhere.
Let's lure them in with a real dog.
But then they're drinking from a hose, I think, wasn't it? Or was it just a fountain?
I
hope
remember.
It was a hose.
I drank from many hoses.
Of course we did, but that's just more memorable. There's two sets of kids. They're watching through binoculars and they've got walkie-talkies.
They have a sting.
And then, but they're doing other stuff and they're so bored that then when the dog nappers show up, they just walk away with this Bouvier.
Yeah, like
and then they're like, oh no.
That's 3 grand in today's
money. You let them take my dog that I loaned you for your sting.
Who would loan someone a dog for a
and
sting?
And the kid
like
was
that?
Like, my parents are going to be so upset. I don't know how you'd explain that.
Oh, I don't know, man. But,
like, you knew there were dog nappers, and then you put your dog out there to be dog napped. And then, yeah, sorry, mom and dad.
Do you remember the science that was going on before it? Because it's always begins with a science experiment.
Yes.
What
the,
was it?
The parabola?
The parabolic conductor to hear. And I'm like, how's this going to get involved? And of course it does.
Yeah.
They use a dog whistle to get the dog barking.
And then they have the receptacle, so they're picking up more sound.
Yes.
You, like turning it around, and wow, it worked.
And then Tom's on his 10-speed bike.
Yeah. Like,
everyone, did Simon, did you have a 10-speed?
With the handlebars that are
you turn.
I didn't have one of those.
Everyone seemed to.
I had a BMX and then I had a mountain bike.
You were cool. I mean, mountain bike was later 80s, I think. No one had a mountain bike in the early 80s.
No. I had a very
But he had a BMX
bike.
At that BMX point. It was way cooler.
Oh, yeah.
And then I had a mountain bike.
Yeah.
But you're right. They would take those handlebars are called drops, by the way.
Okay.
And then you flip them up, and everyone would drive around on those with the handles flipped up. Those bikes were awful.
They were very hard on your back. There was no reason to be bent over like that unless you were in a race.
Hey, do you remember the motocross style bikes?
Of course.
Where
Casey had one, and I loved it.
The one with the fake full bench seat.
And like the fake gas.
Yes, the fake gasket. Do you remember that, Simon?
Yeah, they weighed like 1,000 pounds.
Yeah. They were the coolest bike as a kid.
I'm just pretty sure that your current bike has drop handlebars that you just were disparaging so badly.
I do ride a road bike, but I don't ride. I don't flip. I am in my 40s, so now I have to get spandex on and ride a bike.
Right.
Well,
it makes sense.
So I do ride.
Pad your butt.
I do ride the AKA 10 speed, but it's a little bit different now. Mm-hmm. I still ride it pretty slow, though.
Yeah.
They would ride. He was riding around on this bike, and they find the people.
I was
delighted, and then
not magically, scientifically, they found where the dogs were being hidden in a garage.
Yeah,
and then they waited, and then they freed all the dogs. And fortunately, they had called because they had all their walkie talkies.
Right.
Which also did you have walkie talkies?
Oh my gosh! Of course I did. You didn't?
We did.
Simon,
but they
chime
didn't
in
last
on this
very
one.
Long.
If you didn't have walkie-talkies in the 80s, I think you were
like,
probably...
What you, yeah.
Like, I don't know.
You had one.
Just a sad, you were a sad kid because you're like, I don't have a walkie-talkie. I have to talk to people when they're nearby.
Well, you could only be like 10 feet away.
True.
So as soon as your friend... And it would pull up
the
antenna,
anyways.
It would pull up. I had G.I. Joe ones.
We did have an intercom in my house, like one you plugged in.
Were you guys rich?
No. It wasn't in the wall. It was like one you bought from Canadian Tire. And then you just plugged it in.
You probably bought it from Radio Shack.
Possibly, though, right? Radio Shack, yes. But those were, and we treated it like walkie-talkies.
If you were really wealthy, you would, or you had a dad with a cool car, you had CBs.
True.
We had CBs.
Did you have a CB?
CBs, yes.
With the big antenna on the car?
Did it get used?
Yep.
Really?
Yep.
Eastbound down, loaded up and trucking.
As an adult, I found it in the basement and put it in my car for a while.
Oh, so cool.
Somebody stole it though. So that's
really
sucked. Yeah.
Breaker, come in, breaker.
Yeah. Oh, that was the best on Dukes.
Yeah,
when they had those. Yeah, that was
lost sheep to shepherd.
Now it's just stupid cell phones.
Yeah, not as fun.
No.
With the walkie-talkies though, Jeff, did yours always telescoping antennas would always break?
Oh yeah, it would. Yeah, I had like several that were broken.
Yeah, like a stub of an antenna.
Yeah. But it was so boss just pulling it out and then pulling up the antenna. And then, can anyone hear me? And then no one could really hear you unless you were close. But like on movies, it would show like friends that were like...
In other neighborhoods.
A couple streets away and they're having full conversation.
Sure.
I never could get it to operate like that, but boy, was it fun trying.
So this was your pick. Obviously, it was very... formative for you.
Yeah. There's a bunch on YouTube.
Yes,
so if you want to challenge yourself and, you know, get back to me and tell me if I'm off my rocker, but I think it's a fun show.
I can see. Yes,
would I show it to kids? Probably not because of the quality of the filming.
Yeah,
but I still find it fun.
Yes, I definitely, as I said, if I watch it now, not enjoyable. But then thinking back to when I was, you know, 10, 11, it would have been super cool that they then were explaining all these things, because I did like. Do you remember? Chickadee and Owl magazine.
Yeah, of course.
And Dr. Zed.
Of course.
So remember when Dr. Zed would come to your school and do...
He never came to my school.
Oh, your school is not very good. I got to see him at least twice. He was so cool.
What?
And so this angle of doing scientific experiments and would have definitely
now
been
I
in my
review
lane.
Now I want to review Owl TV because that was a good show.
I was going to suggest that at one point. So we could
guys,
do that.
We have so much content. That, yeah. But we're going to move on now. We're going to talk about... Joel's pick. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back.
My super golden crisp cereal turns this nutritious breakfast into a super treat.
Spoon up the crunch, sugar bear.
One vitamin packed punch coming up. These cats look kind of pale. Eat more wheat. Can't get enough super golden crisp. It's got the crunch with punch.
Yeah!
Kids are crazy about new crazy crayons. You can get your very own crazy crayon free when you buy specially marked boxes of Super Golden Crisp cereal.
Joel, we're back. I brought the old guitar out for you.
Ooh.
I've been working on something.
Thanks.
As a good segue.
I'll thank you in advance in case I change my mind after.
This is the our debut of our band.
Okay.
This is our new band. You may know the song.
Everybody wants something that'll never give up. Everybody wants something that'll take your money and never give up. Everybody get ready and get into gear. The Degrassi sensation, the one and only. The remedy is here. Woo. The Zit remedy is here.
That was for you, Joel.
Wow. That was fantastic. It's one of my favorite songs of my childhood.
That is by the late, great Zit Remedy.
First known as the Zits. And then the Zit Remedy.
Are you sure?
Yep. They changed their name.
Oh, I thought it was Zit Remedy right from the beginning.
No, they switched it up.
So, Joel, with that intro, do you want to tell us what we're going to review next? And then we'll play the actual intro of the show.
This is definitely my favorite show of that early adolescence into adolescence. Is the Degrassi Junior High, which then became Degrassi High. So let's go to... My argument for the greatest theme song of a show of that era.
I'm probably going to agree. Roll it.
Wake up in the morning feeling shy and lonely. Gee, I gotta go to the school. I don't think I can make it. Don't think I can take it. I wonder what I'm gonna do. But when I look around, I see that someone is smiling right at me. Wait!
I can still sing that word for word. I've watched a whole bunch of episodes in preparation for this episode, and I think I've seen all of them. I have them all on DVD.
You got them early, didn't you? Like, I remember you saying to me that...
As soon as it came out, I bought them for sure. And, yeah, I loved this show growing up. It starts after the series Kids of Degrassi Street, which was... it's not a direct spinoff. That was early 80s, I believe. And then a number of those actors are still in this, but we're following the lives of kids in grade 7 to 9 who attend Degrassi Junior High, seeing them engage with adolescent bodies, minds, and social issues of the times like teen pregnancy, abortion, racism, and a whole host of others.
Yeah, just what you're thinking about in grade seven.
Yep. Or for us, it started in 1987, so we're in grade five.
Yeah, I think that's why maybe for us it was a big show.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was like we're looking up to
that's what I was going to say.
To the teenagers yep. on set, right?
We want to be cooler, bigger, feel like we're more mature, and then, yeah, watching the kids ahead of us.
So that was, it began in 1987, and you said we were in grade five at the time.
Yep.
And then what was the actual run of the show? Do you know when it ended?
I didn't make that note.
I think it's 19, I want to say again.
I mean, grade 7, 8, 9.
I think 91 it ended. I think yeah, it was our last, right. when in we went school. Into high school, yeah. I think, that ended, and we were full-fledged teenagers at that point. And then we moved on to Beverly Hills 90210.
Right, which apparently is Degrassi was a big influence on the development of Beverly Hills 90210.
Let's do a little bit of the credits then. So who was starring in this show?
Well, like you said with the previous show, we have these obviously were largely actors. But they were regular kids. So I don't think a lot of them went on to big careers in the silver screen. But for me, they live on the silver screen of my heart. So we have Pat Mastroianni, Stacey Mistyson, I think is the right way to say it, Stefan Brogan, Amanda Steptoe, Neil Hope, Anais Granofsky, and then a whole bunch of others.
There was a huge cast. So they yeah. went through 20 to 30 kids. Yep. And then I think as they went on, they started to get a feel for who was really clicking with the audience. And then they started revolving stories around the same sorts of people.
But it was big. So, yeah, it wasn't.
It was like a universe.
Yeah, it never got down to like six characters and that's who you followed.
Right.
They had kids at different grades and then stories that involved lots of them. And as we were chatting before recording, that they even had bit characters who you would see in not every episode necessarily, or they'd just be in the background and then they'd have little parts pop up here and right. there. They incorporated a lot of diversity in the casting ethnically.
Yeah, and I think for me, growing up, I didn't grow up in Toronto. I grew up in a smaller community, and mm-hmm. so I didn't necessarily see that diversity in my own school.
Mm-hmm. But not
seeing,
as much.
No, not as much. It was there, but seeing it from the big city perspective mm-hmm. and all the different cultures in Toronto at the time,
yep.
it was pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm.
One thing to note, the creators are Kit Hood and Linda Schuler. And the primary writer was Ian Moore.
Mm-hmm. And this aired on CBC. I remember watching it after school pretty regularly. It was in syndication. And then it was big in the U.S. or in pockets of the U.S. WGBH in Boston, I think, was a funder. And so they spread it out across parts of America. So lots of people down in the States, you know, who the biggest Degrassi fan arguably in the world is?
In the world?
Yeah.
It is a comic book guy.
Mm-hmm.
He also wrote Mallrats.
Yep.
And why am I forgetting his name? Kevin Smith.
Exactly. Kevin Smith.
I knew that. I knew that.
He's a nerd. Loves Degrassi.
Maybe
he was in Degrassi at one point. Yeah.
The Next Generation.
Yeah, that they worked him.
We won't talk about Next Generation, but arguably, I mean, you got the Drake who is, yeah.
Well,
you know,
but more importantly, but they brought up the characters that we grew up with
yeah.
into that.
I didn't watch it, though.
No.
I felt I couldn't connect with it.
No, we shouldn't. If we were still feeling like we were connecting with grade nines at that age.
Well, we're still watching a bit this show, though.
I know, but this connects us. It's really us to us.
No, we're lame.
At that time.
No, like, no. Simon,
we're
do you
lame,
watch the show?
But I don't think this is the reason. Sean, there's many other reasons.
I didn't really watch it.
No,
same,
it would have been past you.
No, I mean, I was aware of it. I've seen episodes
yeah,
again,
oh,
but
sure.
I didn't watch it on a
he was in university.
My No, I wasn't.
he was working at the steel plant.
I don't have time for this, losers.
My peers watched it. I just, like I said, we didn't really watch.
You're
a lot
watching
of TV
movies,
on a regular
or
base.
Not even the CBC. Movies. That's sanctioned stuff.
Yeah.
Up here, like TV. I thought, CanCon not only affected what was allowed to be broadcast, but like Canadians were required. Like, look, you got to put in your time watching Canadian TV shows.
And then you will listen to CBC Radio in the morning before school.
Yeah, that we never definitely did that.
You didn't do that?
No way.
You didn't listen to CBC Radio, Simon?
No.
Did you do anything? Like,
I listened to CFNY.
Yeah.
Humble and Fred in the mornings.
They were not in the 80s.
No, that was more the 90s.
Yeah, it was the 90s.
Well, no, it was early.
CKOC here was...
CKOC,
That was top.
That was AM radio, man.
I know, but it was popular and it was in our town. They were playing top 40 at that point.
Yeah, when I was...
Spinorama.
In middle school, I had a paper route and I had a AM transistor radio that I keep in my pocket.
Whoa.
And listened to CKOC.
Yeah. Nice.
I almost want to talk about the Dickie D right now, but then
no.
That'll just take us on a...
That'll be another episode.
People are like, Dickie D, where are we going with this? Okay, pervert. So for me, I know exactly when this aired. I even asked my wife, I said, I like to quiz her, and she hates it. Do you know when this aired, what time? And she's like, Monday nights. And it was true. Every Monday, a new episode would come out, and it was about 8:30, I think.
No, it would have been, I think, earlier than that.
Simon's going to look it up right now. Yeah. But it was Monday night. It was Monday night. And it did start on Sunday, but then it got moved to Monday quickly. And it was one of those things. It was like, okay, Monday, I still hate Mondays, but Monday was great for me because I'd be like, I'm going to watch Degrassi Junior High and see what they're up to.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a big event for me.
Yep.
Weirdly, the show, we're going to get into it, really controversial, really raw. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And even when I'm watching it now, I am pretty uncomfortable. And I never really introduce my kids to it because there's so many hot topics that I just didn't even want to deal with.
Right.
Because they're like, seriously, there's some crazy stuff in here. And I don't even know how it got aired at that time. It was very progressive.
Yes. And they didn't, obviously, they had to contain it to some degree, but. So that it could be aired, but you're right that the things that were happening at that time that I imagine most families also were hoping they didn't have to talk about.
Yeah.
They created whole episodes and storylines that went on. It's there's some heavy topics and some dark things that happen in this show.
Very dark. And I think maybe my parents just let me watch it so they wouldn't have to talk to me about those issues. I was just like,
What's the birds and the bees?
Oh, go watch Degrassi.
Yeah, you'll figure that out.
They'll tell you exactly.
Are drugs good or bad? Well, why don't you and your friend go see Gourmet Scum and see if Luke can score us some acid?
Oh, that's when Shane jumped from the bridge.
And Luke lied about it. His friend was laying in a...
So at the time, you'd watch these shows and you... Sometimes they're hyperbolic, right? Like sometimes they're...
Sure.
You know, but then if you think about... And I know from working with young people all through these years, like, and you working with young people through the years, you know that these things definitely do happen to kids.
Yep.
And when you're young, you're just like, oh, this is, you know, made up. But as an adult watching it, I'm like, wow, this is like... I was uncomfortable watching a couple episodes with my kids.
But then at the same time... They weren't making it that this major event happened to all of them.
No.
It was usually one. Right. And then it was interspersed with more normal, say, or in the sense of normative, more frequently happening to every kid. Just the awkwardness of adolescence, puberty, liking somebody. Do they like me back?
It wasn't gratuitous.
No, not
and it
at all.
wasn't dramatized like some, like 90210, for instance, where it was just, you know, totally dramatic and played up. It felt real.
What were the storylines that you remember strongest?
So you asked me to watch two episodes. One was when BLT, and that was the character's name,
Bryant.
What was the LT stand for? Was that
his name? I can't remember. His last name. I think his last name was Thomas.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Where they, BLT and Michelle, were going to get together.
Mm-hmm.
And she brought BLT home. And the parents, you could tell right off the bat, they weren't happy because BLT is African-Canadian. Michelle is white. And the parents they're not happy right off the bat. So that kind of, that still exists today. Those feelings, right? Yeah. Like that people have, like there's
I guess so. I hope it's less, but at the time, for sure, there's folks
at the time though, it was pretty groundbreaking that someone would have kids would have an interracial relationship
and to openly talk about it. Cause I imagine similar to now, this would be a topic that it exists out there.
Right.
These are feelings that people are really having, parents are thinking about, but they're probably not going to talk about. And now we've put it on prime time among adolescents.
Yeah.
Where they're engaging with their parents and seeing their parents differently, how they're responding to their friends based on their ethnicity.
Right. And I thought that was, it was neat to go back and watch that and just say, you know what, those issues still exist.
Mm-hmm.
But at the time it was like, what? They're interracial relationship. Wow, this is amazing. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was really progressive.
Yep.
The other episode you asked me to watch was Snake's brother, who was like the star of the community. He's in medical school and he comes He's super athlete and he comes back to reveal to his family that he's gay.
Mm-hmm.
And again, at the time, I'm showing my, you know, my age. I didn't know no one gay person.
Mm-hmm.
No one had come out.
Mm-hmm.
Not even my uncle at the time had come out. And he, like, I mean, he'd been in my family
his whole life.
He continued to be in my family. But he didn't even come out to the large populace until, you know, mid-90s.
Mm.
So, you know, you didn't even know the existence that, you know, there could be, you know, gay people in your community. So you watch the show and you're like, oh yeah, like that, there's nothing. I thought it was interesting, but I thought I've never even seen a gay person.
And the way that they played it out, I don't know if that would fly on TV today. Because remember when they tied it in the storyline that they had the math teacher teaching about HIV and AIDS.
Yes.
And then the adolescent boys start making fun of being gay.
Yes.
And Snake being one of them. I think it was Snake, BLT, and Shane. Yes. And then
they were doing like the lisping, the caricatures, and all that stuff.
And then they're asking the questions that at that time, with HIV and AIDS becoming more of a topic, people are questioning, like, can you get it from kissing someone? Have you touched their hand?
Well, there was like, it was preposterous. Like, it was, I remember there was a hysteria, like you could get it from a toilet seat.
Yeah.
And so, you know, gay people were vilified in the community.
Yep.
So for them to bring that forward,
but was they showed how
progressive.
Absolutely. And at the same time, showing how kids would engage with this topic of not knowing and making fun of. But then as they engage, so in this episode, Snake engaging with his brother and wrestling through this and what does this mean for me and my family, and then seeing his parents tell his brother get out, and Snake being he's come along before his parents did to see like, no, this is my brother, I still love him, was a huge thing to watch on TV unfold in front of us at that time.
But in reality, many families had to go through that
for sure.
And it's changed, but it still exists today.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. So, yeah, it's very, there were heavy things, and then there's just lighthearted stuff of, you know, Arthur and Yik getting into some crazy scheme. Then the young kids trying to be cool.
Yeah, I think so. They balance
relationships.
They would always have like two subplots going. So they'd have the heavier subplot. Yep. And then they would pull back on that subplot so they could give you a little bit of relief from the trauma that you're experiencing while you're watching it. Because, like, every episode, man, like, I was like, whoa, this, I can't believe this just happened.
Yeah. And, yeah, it's my favorite show from that era. I can still recall pretty much every character's name. And it was always fun, as you referenced, these things happening in Toronto. That's where these folks lived mostly too. So some exciting times as then, I guess would have been my 20s. Then when I got into going to punk shows, you know who I would see at punk shows?
Tell me.
Spike.
Did she have the hair?
No. And there's actually a song by the group called Skank and Pickle, a ska band, called I'm in Love with a Girl Named Spike, and it's about her, which That's is awesome. A killer tune. And then my friend and I were going to a show, and we would always go to this falafel place on Queen Street. And then one day when we were in there, Snake walked by and gave a homeless guy a dollar. So there was another way that Degrassi came real to me.
My claim to fame was I used to, I moved to Toronto probably mid-20s, and I lived in the neighborhood of Yonge and Davisville, and there was a bar called the Bow and Arrow, and Arthur Kobolowski was the bartender. And, you know, like, I wanted to say something, but I could tell, like, he probably had heard it all before.
Yeah.
So I just left him alone, but I was enamored.
Yeah.
Like, because it was so cool seeing Arthur Kobolowski.
Yeah.
And he was, like, he started out, he was, like, one of the main stars of the show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But he did
kind of Stephanie Kay is his brother. Their parents got divorced
right.
in junior high.
Right.
And then Stephanie ended up leaving. I think the story was that she went to live with their mom. And so then she left the show. But then Arthur lived with his dad. Yeah, so there were so many characters. I can tell you names and things that happened to them. And it's had a resurgence in recent years. So Pat Mastroianni and Stacey Mistyson, they are sort of the head up this, and they've, Pat has organized, who's Joey, Jeremiah, and Caitlin. They're the, sort of focal, the primary stars, I would say, throughout it. And definitely the adolescent romance of our era. Caitlin and Joey.
It was nice that they got together.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
then
until the end.
Until
school's
the
out. Oh, good grief, Joey.
That was a heartbreaking
episode. It was.
Episode.
And do you remember
it was a
why
movie.
Do you remember why it was a big deal too?
I don't know. It was 1992.
Yeah.
I was in grade 10.
But that they meant when they aired it, they aired the F word.
Oh,
uncensored on it. Snake uses it because Joey was cheating on Caitlin. And he says it, and it was on TV.
Well, now that you say that, the episode that you had me watch, the N-word's used.
They used the N-word, and which I did not remember.
And my wife was watching that episode with me, and she's like, did they just use the N-word?
Yeah.
Because it was showing that the difficulty that BLT was facing mm-hmm. in school.
Yeah, and how he got in trouble for a kid calling him that, and then he responded. But anyhow.
I mean, I can recite quotes all day long from this show.
Mm-hmm.
Do you got a couple for me?
Well,
can I quiz you on a couple?
You could try. Yeah.
I want you to finish the sentence. I'm Mr. Radich, okay?
Okay.
Yick you the
disorganized.
Yes, ding 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 ding. Like, why would he badger Yick all the time? Mr. Yick you the disorganized. Yeah. Like, he always badgered poor Yick you.
I know, but he was. He always, his locker was a mess. He never knew what was going on. And then he became cool. Remember, he got his ear pierced and he had the dangly earring, and him and Luke were friends.
And then he ditched Arthur.
Yeah.
Which,
and they would,
but
they
that
started
happened.
Using drugs.
But that happens
true.
In high school,
does,
right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Those
it did show
changed.
That, too, that people changed over time, not always for the better.
Yeah.
It was really good.
I got one more for you.
Okay.
I'm Joey Jeremiah, chairman of the
Welcoming Committee.
Yes, correct. Ding, 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 ding.
Well, okay, then
I'm not going to get it. I'm not good at
no,
this.
Well, you will, because it's in the notes.
Oh, perfect.
So, who said...
Narbo.
So, that these are a couple of the...
I use these lines still.
The, insults of Degrassi.
That was... Well,
Narbo.
Yick, you would always use Narbo.
And Broomhead.
I never liked Broomhead. I thought it was not...
Yeah,
I thought it was stupid.
It's trying too hard. But I think they said Narbo's they came good. Up with them because they were trying to come up with insults that would fly on TV, that they wouldn't get censored.
The best line you wrote down, and I used this on my wife at least 3 to 4 times a year. Like, I'll look into her eyes. Can you do the line for me?
Your eyes are so blue, they look like pimming swools.
Yeah. Like, I don't know.
Do you remember who said it?
It was Yuck to Caitlin, wasn't it?
No. Melanie.
To Melanie.
Remember you like Melanie?
Yes.
Melanie. See this.
Pimming
and this was so.
Swools,
was
and they start laughing at him.
It was so interesting because, like, I can recount for you. I can't recount for you our high school, like, or elementary school romances.
Right.
But I know who was all connected. Yicked like Melanie. But Melanie likes Snake.
Well, and they dated.
They Snake did. But Melanie. Then, do you remember, there was like a concert that I think, wasn't it Gourmet Scum? It must have been.
Yeah, well, it was always Gourmet Scum.
Yeah. And then they, so Snake asked her to go, but she didn't have money, so she stole $20 from her mom's purse. It was just not, it's not good. But something simple like that, that for sure happened, at least it happened, or you thought about it as a kid.
Yeah.
Like, oh man, my allowance is only a dollar. That's a $20 bill right there. I could buy a lot of comics and penny candy.
I definitely took money from my parents.
Yeah.
And got caught.
I don't think I did, but I for sure thought about it.
I remember taking money from my parents, going to the store and buying like $10 worth of candy and bringing a big bag of candy back home. And then
like an idiot.
And I was like 5 or 6 and I went and I ate it in my car and my... Because I was hiding. I was hiding.
Oh, like in your...
I went to the store on my own. I came back with a big bag of candy, and I was gone for like a long time. And then my dad opened the car door, and I had a big bag of candy. And he was like, I found him. And then I got, let's just say I got 80 style justice, parent justice. Because I lifted from them and then bought all kinds of candy.
Right.
And I went to the store, like I crossed busy streets.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. I was bad to the bone. Definitely. there was something I wanted to talk about. But now I kind of forget it. But well, do you remember the teachers in the...
Of course. That was another interesting thing, that they incorporated so many teachers and they had them come into storylines at points, but they were consistent throughout the entire series. So you knew Mr. Raddich, you knew Miss Avery. I can't remember the...
The grade 8 teacher, I forgot his name. He was...
Math teacher?
Yeah, but he was like not... The main guy, but it was Raddich and Avery that I remember the most.
Yeah.
And they were like the caring adult, because there was really no other adults in it. It was, there was adults
parents,
on the periphery. It was the periphery.
Remember, their wheels, like his parents.
That was devastating.
Yeah, his parents died.
Both parents died in a drunk driving accident.
Yeah, they were hit by a drunk driver. And then he had to go live with his grandparents. They were like the worst actors. Because his grandpa was like in a wheelchair and didn't talk. And
that made him a bad actor? That's pretty good
acting. No, he did it poorly.
Did he stand up and walk around? Like, I don't even...
And then his grandma had like one
Derek,
tone. Yeah.
Derek. Derek.
Yeah.
Derek was Wheels.
Yeah, Wheels.
And I just, can I just interject? Wheels tragically died...
In Hamilton.
At 35.
Yeah. And here's a weird story. I don't know if it's true, but back in the early, before pre-internet, we had BBSs.
What is a BBS?
So for, if your name's not Toast, our friend who still functions on using a 57.6 baud modem, you would log into your computer and it would send a signal through your modem. And then if it wasn't busy, the other person's computer would pick it up and they'd have a bulletin board system where you could just leave messages. You could trade games, which is how we would pirate back in the day. And one of our friends ended up on an FBI watch list.
He did.
Yeah,
you call him Toast. I call him Head.
Head. Yeah. But there was a group.
He has many aliases because he was on the FBI Most Wanted list.
Yes. In the group that he was associated with. Anyhow.
Mom, put the phone down. I'm trying to connect to the BB. That was called the internet at that time.
So anyhow, one of them we used a lot was CompuSpec, because that was put up by our local paper. And the person said that they were Neil Hope that I was chatting with.
Serious?
I'm not kidding.
Make that up? No one would make that up.
And I remember just chatting, and they were like, they said they were really depressed and like, hey, this is all checking out. So I feel, it was weird, because I hope it was really him and not someone just being a goon, but also sad, because then I was like, hearing about how sad his life was.
That's pretty heavy.
Like, man, I could have maybe said more
things,
but hey.
I mean, I guess that's like the reality of that TV show, is they weren't all huge actors that went on to finish off their careers in acting.
Nope. There's still some in there, and I think lots in the industry, but
for sure.
I don't know that any of them, other than Degrassi continuing, that then certainly Spike and Snake and I think other characters had a life in that show, but it didn't launch into, which is, I think another feature of Canadian programming that's sort of the end of it. Like, most people don't go on to become big stars of the screen.
Right.
This might be the end of it.
So this, interestingly enough, this isn't released around the same time as the show Saved by the Bell. Hmm. And they had a similar run.
Mm-hmm.
And they're both about teens, but I felt I like both the shows.
Sure, I like
them. Saved by the Bell was probably further reaching, but I don't have the same nostalgic vibes for Saved by the Bell like I do this show.
No, that one was just like slapsticky, goofy.
Yeah.
And they're beautiful people. Yeah, they covered serious topics like in theory, but it was not as genuine. As Degrassi.
I sent you a website. I don't know if you got a chance to check
it
out, but our viewers should check it out. It's called DegrassiPanthers.com. And this website is dedicated to tracking down filming locations.
Mm-hmm. That's super neat.
And just seeing how the neighborhoods are gentrified.
Mm-hmm.
I found that fascinating. The website, I don't think it's been updated in a number of years.
Well, those places probably didn't change much.
But it's interesting that someone, mm-hmm. you know, obviously like us, that have those, you know, retro feels, would go and create that website mm-hmm. to, you know, it's really interesting to see how the city's changed.
Mm-hmm. And those key places like the school, because, you know, there's a real Vincent Massey school.
That was in Etobicoke, I think.
Was it?
Yep.
Yeah, that's where they filmed it. That's what was the outside of Degrassi.
Have you been to the actual Degrassi Street?
So I've for sure been on it.
Yeah, it's in like the Leslieville area. Mm-hmm. There's a Degrassi school, but mm-hmm. it's not the one that's
school,
depicted.
No, nope.
But it's interesting the way that they found that neighborhood mm-hmm. and then they continued with the neighborhood.
Yep.
And it still exists today, which mm-hmm. is really cool.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, this was fun to revisit, and I will continue watching them probably for the rest of my life.
Yeah, I'll probably end up watching them as well because I sometimes pull it up on, I have a provider that shows them mm-hmm. on repeat, mm-hmm. the 24/7
yep.
repeat, and sometimes I watched like 15 episodes this week, and it was so fun.
Yeah, it takes you right back.
It does take you right back.
Remembering those people and characters and the situations they're in. And yeah, what it was like for us at that age. And hopefully a lot of those we dodged, but we could see the thing experience almost develop empathy in some way through watching these kids that were not that different from us.
Yeah, I think we kind of grew up in that golden age of progressive movements. We're coming out of a conservative era.
Mm-hmm.
And it was nice to be exposed to that.
Yep.
So I think you picked a banger. I would say it has a little bit more substance than the Edison Twins.
Sure. There was no scientific explanation for why would Caitlin be interested in a goon like Joey?
He's so cool. He had a band.
Yeah, that's true.
He was dressed cool.
One song.
Well, I had a band too, and we only had one song. It was called Sammy. That was it.
Yeah.
We didn't go further than that. Okay. We'll take a short break and we'll be right back.
Whatever the risk, they're ready to take a chance. Daring adventure on Danger Bay on a new day and time, Monday. It's the boys against the girls at Degrassi Junior High.
I would like to formally declare this competition open.
When the boys claim to be the better athletes, the stage is set. But who will win the great race? Degrassi Junior High, best on the box, Monday.
And we're back.
All right, well, we spent a lot of time telling you about why we liked these shows. So let's go check the answering machine and see what other folks thought.
The name is Kenny Bunker from Kenny Bunkport, Maine.
Why do we love Degrassi? I don't know. I have no idea. Other people have probably given some really good answers, but I think one thing that I was reminded of is that Degrassi was a show that we actually had access to. You know, the fact that it played on the CBC was a really big deal. And just that in itself served as an on-ramp for us to be involved in these stories with these kids. And I know just for myself, I was the same age as the kids that were on Degrassi Street. And there was a real, familiarity with the stories that were being told, just like the overall setting and aesthetic of the show. You know, it didn't feel like this other thing. It's like you could recognize the characters, you could recognize the houses that they lived in. There was just like a very real and true feeling or sense to that, which was really important. So I don't know, Degrassi's all right.
Hi, my name's Lori from St. Catharines, Ontario, Canada, and I absolutely love any podcast that has anything to do with something retro. Commercials, television, songs, music, movies, restaurants, you name it. I love listening to it. The Cinema Time Capsule has been a new favorite because I have forgotten about so many of the movies and television shows from my childhood. And when I hear the guys talk about it, it brings back so many great memories. The Edison Twins episode, I can't even tell you the last time I had even thought about that show. But immediately, the theme song popped into my head. And it's like I remembered every single word. When I heard Cinema Time Capsule was doing a segment on Degrassi Junior High, again, the theme song was in my head right away. Degrassi Junior High was one of my favorite shows of all times. It came out when I myself was in grade 7. And I think I absolutely love the fact that this whole group of kids my age were having these huge adventures and exciting things happen to them at a school that I literally thought was just down the QEW in Toronto. Which it was, but clearly it wasn't real. I absolutely loved the themes that they had. I loved the topics that they tackled. It just seemed like it was a TV show written for my age. When I got to high school, there ended up being a student at my high school that was actually from Degrassi High. And she was also the girl that was on the dip granola bar boxes. And my mind was blown to actually go to high school with someone that was on a show that I love so much. Funny story, one of my best friends was on a high school field trip at a play in Toronto and got sidetracked and missed the bus home because a character from Degrassi was sitting in a restaurant and she went in and was in absolute awe and missed her bus time. Such a great show and so real and so edgy for its time, I think.
Hey guys, it's Sarah from Hamilton. I'm just calling in to talk about my memories of watching Degrassi Junior High every day after school with my big brother, whose girlfriend made him watch it with me. I have fond memories of one particular episode. I think it was called 20 Bucks. I don't remember why I know that title, but it was about everybody trying to get tickets to go see a band called Gourmet Scum. And Spike was waiting on her child support payments, and Caitlin was excited to go with Joey, and somebody stole money out of their mom's purse, and it was one of my favorite episodes. It's the one that I remember the most fondly, but Degrassi Junior High, set in Toronto, it was wonderful.
Joel, I have finally got myself on some kind of social media.
Your wife allowed that?
Listen,
she doesn't know.
She probably wants me to be on social media of some sort. I don't do social media.
That's true.
I'm afraid of it. I don't like it. I just don't like being tracked down for the stupid things I say.
Right.
However, I found one directly related to retro movies, and it's called Letterboxd. I've discovered it from listening to other movie podcasts that are better.
Yep.
Maybe I should do a shout out to them.
Yeah,
I've been.
Who do you enjoy?
If you're interested in listening to other movie podcasts, my favorite ones right now are Shat the Movies.
Yep, that's a good one.
And I love Evolution of Horror.
Mm. Yeah, you just told me about that.
It's a great one. Those are two great podcasts. And I got the idea from those podcasts specifically. I think it was Evolution of Horror. So I've started compiling our lists of movies that we're going to review in the future and starting to categorize them. So it's on Letterboxd, and you can, I don't know, is it called following? What do you do? Is that what it means?
I think so. I think that's what you do.
We follow someone?
Yeah, it's a bit
or
creepy.
Or like someone? Or
I'm not sure how that platform works.
You can see our lists on Letterboxd, and you type in Child of the 80s, and I'll send that to Joel to link it to some universe.
I think it's on our Facebook.
Did you link it to something?
I think I did, yep.
You type in all, it's all together,
yeah.
Child of the 80s.
Letterboxd Com.
Yeah, and you can start to see all the lists we're compiling, and if you have suggestions for adding to those lists, that would be a great help for us as we try to curate the movies that you think should go into the cinema time capsule.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, we're on Facebook, we're on Instagram, the podcast is on more than half a dozen platforms, so find us, send us your thoughts, themes you may have that we should consider for future episodes. Tell us what you like, what you don't like, which of us should talk less, which of us should talk more.
Well, there's only two of us, so...
Well, Simon.
It would just be like a monologue.
Yeah, they might... In fact, they might say, could you just get the guest and then you guys leave?
Actually,
just
stop give it, making a podcast. Yeah. So if you want us to stop making the podcast, you would email us at cinematimecapsule@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. Mm-hmm. So if you want to drop voice messages to us, we would love to put them on for you.
Absolutely.
And please give us a rating on the podcast platform of your choice.
Yep.
And tell your friends.
Mm-hmm. So until the next time,
we'll see you at the movies.
This has been the Cinema Time Capsule Podcast. For more information about Cinema Time Capsule, please email us at cinematimecapsule@gmail.com. This podcast was produced by Simon Wielden. The theme song was performed by Bruce Turney and Simon Wielden. Thanks for listening.